Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Happy, Sad, Confused. I'm Josh Horowitz. You're listening to my very own podcast. Thanks for tuning in. This is another episode I'm really excited about. We're in the middle of the Tribeca Film Festival here in New York City, which is always awesome because New York is my hometown. I like New York. I like film festivals. I like cool actors. So why not let all three merge for a couple weeks in the middle of April? And that's what's happening right now as I record this. This is the first weekend of Tribeca. The last episode, if you guys didn't catch it, was with Patrick Stewart. If you have not listened to that, please do, because that dude is the coolest man on the planet. And it's a really fun podcast. But this one is awesome, too. And I know there's so many fans of this guy out there, and that's partially why I booked him. And another reason is I'm just a fan as well. Chris Messina is an actor who you might know by name, you might not. If you watch The Mindy Project, you definitely know him. He's a significant part of that. He is the male lead on that show. I feel like every woman in my life is in love with Chris Messina, and I get it. He's a good-looking dude. He's a nice guy. What you see is what you get. He's a smart dude, and he's been knocking around film and TV for years now, and I was just really thrilled to bring him into the studio over at MTV, into my office, to chat about his directing debut. It's a movie called Alex of Venice. It's screening at the Tribeca Film Festival this week. I'm sure it's going to get picked up, and it's going to be available somewhere in a theater or on demand, because it's a good piece of work. And he's in the film with a great cast that we talk about in this podcast, including Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who's always awesome, Don Johnson, and many more people. Chris is just a cool guy. You'll get that vibe right off from the bat. We talk about a lot of his career, his background. He's a New Yorker like myself. And just, you'll get a sense of his sense of humor, and I think you'll really enjoy this. I certainly did. So without any further ado, here he is, Chris Messina. As always, hit me up on Twitter, Joshua Horowitz. Watch all of our interviews on mtvnews.com. My After Hours stuff is over on afterhours.mtv.com if you want to see the lighter, sillier side of me. But for now, here is our latest edition of Happy, Sad, Confused with Chris Messina.
Whether you know it or not, Chris, you were in the middle of the podcast already.
Okay, well, that's fine.
It's happening.
Thanks, man. It's great to be here. Looking around this office at so many cool things you have.
It's a lot of sensory input. I want you to just, you know, absorb and take it all in.
I like it. I like this one of Ruffalo. And is that Cooper there?
This is Ruffalo and... Who's Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's not a flattering look for either of them.
No.
It's a face mashup.
And who is that? Bradley Cooper?
This is Bradley Cooper, and can you figure out who this is? This is a lovely young actress that has won an Oscar recently.
Oh, that's him and Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, so this was when we were announcing movie award nominations a couple years ago. This was like a silly game we were playing to like see if you could figure out who the nominees were based on these face
mashups. Is Will Ferrell mashed with me?
Yep, that's Galifianakis.
Oh my god.
Horrifying.
That's amazing.
One day your face will be mashed up with an actor on my wall, Chris.
If I'm so lucky.
I was saying congrats. Obviously, we're in New York right now. Tribeca Film Festival has just started as we tape this, and you're a big part of it. Your directorial debut, so congratulations.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. It's nice to be here. I've been here. We talked, I think, once here or twice here I was here with this movie Fairhaven.
Yep.
And Monogamy. I think we talked about
Monogamy, for you and Rashida.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then Giant Mechanical Man with Jana Fischer. So it's nice. You know, it's an honor to be back as a director.
It's so cool. I mean, is this something that that has been on the list for a while to direct a feature?
Yeah, I directed when I was living in New York. I directed a lot of really off Broadway black box theater productions, and I always wanted to do a movie. I kind of been telling my friends and family how good of a director I would be for years, you know, as you watch movies and go, why did they do that? Why did they cut to that? Why did they use that actor? I don't understand. Why is there so much cutting? Why? And then when it's your turn to do it, you're like, oh shit, I've talked such a big game, and now I'm nervous as hell, and I'm making all these mistakes.
Were you nervous on set? Because that's the one place I would feel like you wouldn't be, like you know that space.
Yeah, no, I wasn't nervous. I was nervous while prepping it, because it's like a, especially for these small movies, I'm not sure what it would feel like to do a big one, but for the small one, 21 days, it's like a train that takes off, and you can't slow it down.
Right,
it's like a bullet train. And there were a few times on set that I was nervous, as we had to move so quickly. Did we get everything we needed?
Right.
And then when I was in editing, I became extremely nervous because that was my footage now. And although some of it was fantastic and the performances are great and I was really proud of it, there were also things that I totally screwed up and now had to fix.
Right.
So, I guess had I not talked so much shit about being such a great director before I had done it, I wouldn't have been maybe as nervous. But it was an amazing experience.
Well, the movie we should mention is Alex of Venice, and you've got this awesome cast that I want to talk about too, because anyone that's seen Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who's had this great career going, where she, you know, like yourself, has like kind of dabbled in different kinds of movies, and frankly, the best work she's done has been in the independent realm.
Yeah.
Smashed is.
She's amazing. That's how I found her. Yeah, Smashed.
And she's great in this one too. You mentioned though, like it's interesting because I noticed when I was watching the movie, like you start with some rather long takes too, some extended shots. Like it's not a very cutty movie. You're kind of letting the scenes play out, and I would think that comes from an actor's point of view too, where you probably, I would guess, you enjoy scenes where you can let it breathe and actually react, etc.
It's funny because as an actor. As an actor, I get scared of those kind of scenes because you sometimes feel like because you might not get a chance at a close up or a bunch of takes that you have to do it right, which there is never any right or wrong, but you want to be good, and so sometimes as an actor, like a lot of times on the newsroom. We'll do these walk and talks and all this dialogue, and you know they might not cover it, and so you start to sweat and get nervous,
and you don't want to be the one to screw it up.
Exactly, but as a viewer, as an audience member, I really enjoy when I don't see a lot of cutting, because as soon as it starts cutting all around, I become aware of all the tricks and all the director trying to hide things, or just the filmmaking.
Yeah, you can lose yourself more in like a scene that just goes on.
Yeah.
And it's two people talking, and you're not as aware of the camera and the cutting and the music, etc.
It's you know, some of my favorite films, like you know, a lot of Woody Allen stuff or whatever. It's just the camera just keeps following the people, and he doesn't cut. And I kind of get a kick out of watching films with people like they haven't cut yet. You know, they haven't cut yet. But so anyway, yeah, I tried to do that. At times, I was really happy that I did that, and at times, again, in the editing room, that's what you got,
right?
You know.
So, give me a little background first, because I mean, as you said, we've talked a few times, but never really, frankly, at the length we're doing today. And that's part of what's fun about this podcast is I get to actually get to know the people I've been talking to for years.
Yeah.
So, did you grow up in New York? Are you a New Yorker, in the city, or where are you?
Long
from?
Island, Northport, Long Island. I grew up there. My mom was a dance teacher, and so in the third grade, I started taking dancing class, and I was very into it. I wanted to become Baryshnikov. I was super, super into it. I got beat up throughout junior high, I think, pretty much, because the kids didn't quite understand that I wore tights and ballet shoes. And
was that something that you were considering, like really making a go of it?
Yeah, I did. I really wanted to. I knew that I couldn't do it from Long Island, although there was a great dance school that I had gone to there. I would come on the weekends and take classes here in the city with some real master teachers. And I wanted to go to LaGuardia High School and be in fame.
Sure.
And
you wanted to live forever.
Yes, exactly. And my parents denied me that, and at the time I was like, you know, why are you doing me? You're ruining my life.
You don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. As I, like, burned my ballet shoes in front of them or whatever. But, and so I stayed in my town and went to Northport High School, where I discovered this class called Living Theater. It was an English elective by this great teacher, John Gaverluck. And he kind of changed my life. We would do these improv shows in a black box theater in our high school. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It was cool to be an actor. I did very, very bad in school, so this was a place that kind of gave me a home.
Yeah.
Girls, for the first time, were interested in me. You know, whatever. The football players were like, hey, man, nice job. That was good. And so I started to kind of have an identity through these kind of improvs that we were doing. I went to Marymount Manhattan College here in Manhattan for a semester. I dropped out, and then really I just found my way to a bunch of different acting schools. Gotcha. And classes, and started doing plays. Really did tons and tons of theater here. I actually did a play. I see Jessica Chastain on your wall. The last play I did, which was unfortunately about 8 years ago, was with Jessica Chastain and Michelle Williams at Williamstown. We did The Cherry Orchard, which is in my movie.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. When you worked with Chastain, could everybody sense that this was somebody that had...
She was amazing, but she was right out of Juilliard. I mean, yeah. I think it was one of her first gigs out of Juilliard, and she was incredible. I remember walking to the first day of rehearsal, and I don't know if you've ever been up to Williamstown to that festival. It's gorgeous grounds, and you know, you kind of walking on this path to a little like barn-like rehearsal. And I remember seeing her and thinking how gorgeous she was. And then we got to the table read, and we read, and she was ready to do the role that day.
You know,
I remember thinking that she was my scene partner. My character was Trofimov. And I was in love with Anya, played by Jessica. So it was a magical summer, and the play had a major effect on me, therefore made it into the film. But
that's some of the most poignant stuff in the film, frankly, is Don Johnson is in your film and plays an actor who is past his prime, and that you see him sort of like, you know, in some really heartbreaking audition scenes.
Yeah.
That's got to... I mean, I know you didn't write the film, but it's got to also come out of your own experiences, just going through that process. It feels like those scenes in particular felt really true.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, it's funny, having had The Cherry Orchard and theater and an actor in the movie definitely gave me, it definitely grounded me, because it was always something I understood and knew about and knew how we should tackle it and handle it. I was afraid when the Jessica Goldberg, who really cracked that character. There were a couple writers on the film, and she's the one that invented Roger and said he should be an actor. And then we talked about him auditioning for a play, and then having it be The Cherry Orchard. But I was worried, because sometimes actors in films, it pulls me out of the movie.
Right.
And I'm being an actor. I want to get away from this world and go into the real world.
Right.
And play real people.
Right.
So I kept on, maybe he's a musician, maybe he's, you know, maybe he's just something else, but I'm really happy we kept him an actor. And those days on set where we were doing his stuff is where I felt the most at home, actually.
Yeah. We should mention the cast. I mean, I already mentioned Mary Elizabeth Winstead. You're obviously in it as well. I don't know what it says about you that you've cast yourself as this
narcissistic
kind of
yeah.
You know how we describe him. He's in it, and then he's out of it. He comes back a little bit, but he's not the most dependable
guy.
Yeah.
When I was Lynette Howell and Jamie Patrickoff gave me the script, and they said, "Do you want to play this role and direct this film?" At that time, when they gave me the script, it was a lot of characters, and it was really. It was about Venice and a bunch of people in Venice, California. And what was interesting to me was this family. So we, Katie and Justin, the writers, we kind of dug it apart and took it apart and looked at what was really important in the family we concentrated on. At that point, the movie could have been about, my character could have been about our son, Dakota. It could have been, and it really moved to be Alex's story, which is played by Mary Elizabeth. But I was on the fence about doing it because I wanted to concentrate on being a director. I knew that it would be difficult. I also didn't want people to think that I was directing to act.
Right.
But I want to keep directing, and at some point I'd like to direct myself in a bigger role. So I wanted to dip my toe in and feel it out. I was lucky enough to work with Ben Affleck on Argo and watch him do that in such a big way.
Sure.
And that was really inspiring to me, and I learned a lot from it. So there was one point, maybe 2 or 3 weeks out of going into shooting, where I was like, maybe I should cast somebody else, you know.
Right.
But I hung in there, and I'm glad I did, because it's a very unique experience to direct and act and kind of jump back and forth. I know a lot of people do it, but it's different, you know.
Yeah.
What I did, which I'm proud that I did it, and I think I'd do it again because it was such a fast film and we didn't have playback. You know, Affleck we would do a take for Argo, and then a lot of times, not every take, but a lot of times he could go back to the monitor, play it back, and he would watch it, and he's such a smart guy, and he'd be like, oh, I need to do this or do that differently, you know, and he'd give us direction, we'd go back and do it, and then we'd shoot, and then we'd go back again and look at playback. We didn't have that luxury, so sometimes people would tape it on their iPhone. But I also had a good friend of mine as a great actor that I've known for years, Matt Del Negro, and he took 21 days out of his life. He's also, he plays Derek Luke's lawyer, Frank, in the movie, and a small part that he did me a favor. But he was my director, so when I was on screen, he was directing me, and I trust him very much. And if you showed up that day on set, you would go, Matt Del Negro is directing the movie. So he really saved my ass. Yeah.
It's curious that, again, like, given your background, like, this is a film that has a very specific setting, obviously, Venice, California. I identify you with New York, maybe because I've just talked to you here a bunch and because you grew up in the area. You also, you know, obviously worked with Nora a couple times.
Yeah.
You got a chance to work with Woody. I mean, are those particular moments when you got to work with, like, those two iconic filmmakers and so identified with New York, particularly special given your background?
Yeah, it's those times where, and it sounds corny, when you're like, you know, pinch me, how did I end up here? You know, you're in Barcelona with Woody Allen, or you know, we were at Silver Cup with Nora and Stanley and Meryl and Amy, and you feel very, you know, you feel lucky. I barely finished high school, and I was constantly in trouble, and I dropped out of college, and there were so many times as an actor where I didn't think I would ever work again. Those times might happen again, but I certainly remember them very clearly, wondering what else could I do.
Yeah.
So when you're lucky enough to be on those sets with those people, yeah, you cherish it. And the great thing about those things is you carry them. I'm sure all the actors here that you've talked to along the years will have said something of the sort to you, that they inform everything you do. And so those filmmakers were with me every day on Alex at Venice, which was an amazing thing,
yeah.
You know.
Correct me if I'm wrong, you're also in New York doing double duty. You've been shooting the finale of Mindy Project.
Yesterday Mindy and I, which was fun because we shoot on Universal and we're on the back lot a lot, and we have fake New York City,
right,
which they do a great job of making it look as real as they can, but it was really special to be here yesterday. And we there's nothing like filming in New York. The energy is incredible. But we also film in a bubble, so it was nice to be shooting on the street and have people go, "Hey, we like the show. I watch the show," and have people come up to Mindy and tell her, you know, what she means to them and that kind of stuff. Because we're in a bubble. I stopped reading a lot of the stuff because as you know, you read something nice and you know, you feel really good, and 2 seconds later you read something terrible. Not necessarily about Mindy but about me and my acting or whatever, and then you can't ever forget how bad that person thought you were. You know?
You should read some stuff, though, because particularly thanks to, I mean, your career's always been great, but there's something weird about, like, a sitcom in particular.
Yeah.
And something like what Mindy does, and you know, as you know, people graft onto, like, romantic relationships, on and off relationships.
Yeah.
And people really dig your character and, like, have really, you mentioned the dancing background that strikes me, that has mom and the dance teachers. Did they weigh in on your dancing last year on the show? Because that got a lot of attention.
That was fun. Yeah, that was one of the things where you regret that you said that to the writer's room. Like, you know, what else can you do, Chris? I was like, well, I dance a little. And then they used it. And when I read it in the script, I was oh shit, I'm gonna have to do this now, you know. and then you realize
you've become a meme. Do you know that? You've made it.
Exactly. And I said but it's such a gift that Mindy and the rest of the writers give you when a character, you know, choreographs a dance for someone he loves, is a very fresh, unique take on a romantic gift. So. Mm. It was a real treat. No, my mom was very proud that I danced, and it's fun to dance. I don't do it anymore. I always think about, maybe one day we could sit here and talk about if I ever get to make it. But I always think about, and not that I feel like I can dance like him, but I always would love to make a small biopic, a slice of life, just one moment in Gene Kelly's life, and try to emulate some of those dance moves.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah,
that's crazy. Have you enjoyed sort of the arc of that relationship on the show? And kind of, like, I've heard you reference, like, and back when I was a kid, we're comparable ages. You know, Cheers and Sam and Diane. It was like the one, or Moonlighting. I remember those relationships where you kind of, like, were rooting for them, but you didn't want them to get together. You weren't sure.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. I've learned a lot. The first season was I think hard for me because, you know, and I've said this in other interviews, and I've said it to Mindy. I had Al Pacino on my wall. I worship the films of the 70s, and I if you told me, you know, just a couple of years ago that you'll be on a Fox sitcom, and I wouldn't believe it. And not because I ever thought I was better than that, but I didn't think I had that skill. It wasn't something I honed. It wasn't something I even watched as a kid, really.
Sure.
So the first season I was, like, scared, you know, and felt like I had landed on Mars. And then I started to really appreciate comedy and how hard it is. And I really started to appreciate, you know, everybody's writing and the fact that you get to take a character over this long period of time. And all these things started to mean something more to me. And I started to feel more comfortable there. So I really enjoyed it. You know, fundamentally, it's really nice as an actor to have a job and to go to work like a human being, because most of us just don't know where the next job's going to be. So to go to work every day with a group of people that you really care about, to know the sound guys and what's going on in their life, and feel comfortable around them, and if it's a home away from home, that's really something special.
Yeah.
And then to be around a group of really intelligent, funny writers and actors who have taught me a lot about comedy. Again, talking about Nora and Woody and taking these things, I took that on to Alex of Venice, and I'll take that on for the rest of my career. I'll always remember what Mindy Kaling and those guys taught me, you know.
Is there a short list, whether it's the other New York filmmaking icons, like, I think of, you know, Scorsese and Spike, and have you come close to working with either of those guys or others?
I auditioned for Scorsese. I auditioned for him for The Departed. I got in the room with him. He was lovely. I didn't get the role. That was the closest I've come to him. And yeah, I mean, he's a dream of mine. Him, Coppola, I was lucky to do a reading of Coppola's new movie, and right before I shot Alex at Venice, and most of my meeting with him before he put me in the reading was questions about directing, and he's amazing. And he's like Scorsese, a teacher.
Absolutely,
so he was once I started asking him questions, he wasn't like, get the fuck out of my office. He was very much into helping me.
Yeah.
And he told me to do silent takes, which I did. He said,
Gus Van Sant's done that in recent films too.
Yeah.
Right? So explain that, what that is. It's
well, like, I don't know if I was doing it the way they wanted me to do it or the way they do it, but what I did is we would do the scene, and then and I had said before we started the actors, I heard this thing from Coppola and I want to do it. And it was silent takes where he said a lot of times the it's not the performances, but it's the writing sometimes when you're in editing and you crave more silences and you're looking for reaction shots or something to cut to, just a look.
Sure.
So do the scene in silent. So it would be me and you, you know, a camera on you and a camera on me, and we just be silent with each other. Sometimes it would lead to absolutely nothing, boredom. Sometimes it would lean to, like, uncomfortable laughter.
Right.
Or sometimes an actor would be moved and something would happen. And a lot of times I used that in the film, so I was really lucky to get that tidbit. But he's definitely one. Scorsese, Paul Thomas Anderson is always somebody.
Genius.
I got him to come see Monogamy. And I've never heard from him again, so I'm not sure if he's
a busy guy.
Okay, I'll take that. He's a busy guy. But I love him and his work, and there's so many. I have Spike Jones.
Yeah.
Is so incredible, and yeah. You know, there's a lot of. I'm more of a fan, I think, than any of this stuff, really. You know, I'm pretty, and this isn't to look for a compliment anyway, but I feel sometimes I'm good, sometimes I'm okay, but most times I'm just really excited to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the work, you know, I worked with Sam Mendes, I worked with Nora, I worked with Woody, I was with you know, David Gordon Green and Noah Baumbach, and just to be on those sets, even sometimes for 2 or 3 days, not much time, not big roles. Just fun to see how everybody works.
Absolutely. Well, it's funny because it's like comparable. Like, obviously, we have much different kind of jobs, but people always ask me about, you know, I'm in a very privileged position where I get to talk to, you get to work with the people that you grew up admiring. I get to talk to them and work with them in a sense. And people ask me about, like, you know, keeping it cool or getting nervous. And I kind of always say, I do get nervous, but I don't want to lose the nervousness. I want to still have that kind of, like, that the reason why I'm doing this in the first place is I love this stuff. And,
yeah.
But it's interesting from your perspective, because I would think you also need to let it go, because at the end of the day you need to, like, work with them as equals. You can't, like...
Yeah, that was interesting with Pacino, because I was... You know, there's a scene in the movie where we're going toe-to-toe arguing and screaming at each other. And, yeah, it's hard... You know, it's hard to turn from, like, tell me about The Godfather to I hate you, Dad.
Right.
You know? So there is something that you have to. I don't know what it is or exactly how to do it, but there is something that you have to go. He's an actor,
right?
I'm an actor. We're gonna just struggle to figure this scene out,
and to
let it go. And then every now and then, just literally doing that scene with him. Every now and then on, hopefully mostly on his coverage, where I was like, holy shit, he's. Look at him, man. I can't believe I'm doing a scene without... Okay, then be in my other side of the brain, like, shut up and get in the scene, you know?
Right.
it's fun. It's fun.
You don't want to let go of, like, the love of it and just enjoying the moment.
Yeah.
Or else, like, you're going to, you know, 20 years later, think back, why didn't I just soak that up a little more?
Yeah. Yeah, I was even nervous to... I was nervous with Don. You know, I did grow up watching Miami Vice, and he was... I had to really convince him to do the film, and he's had a lot of experience, and he's a great actor, and I think he's fantastic in the film, and he really lets himself be really vulnerable and stuff, but I had to really convince him to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
I think he's undervalued as an actor, because, I mean, he's popped up in different roles in recent years, and you think of him, you know, and then he did, like, the Nash Bridges thing, which is its own whatever it was.
Yeah.
But he always... there's something really authentic and true about what he brings to it.
Yeah, he works, you know... He worked very hard on the film. He was very dedicated, and you know, I think it was a very different experience for him being so low budget and being so fast like that. And he brought a lot to it. And A lot of care.
Yeah.
A lot of care, yeah.
What is the... I mean, you talk about the lifestyle right now being... It's a nice luxury. Not many people get to be in a show that's as beloved right now as Mindy Project, and you're obviously finding time to work in other films and direct your own stuff. But, like, is there an ideal kind of lifestyle, like, 5 or 10 years, like...
From now?
Talking? Yeah, like, I mean, are you hoping that directing has progressed then, and you're kind of, like, routinized it every couple of years? I mean...
I hope that we could sit down a couple of years from now, and... although... Like, I'm leaving here, we shot Mindy, we're going to do a bunch of press for the film, screen the film, and then I go back and shoot on Newsroom.
Right.
And all that is tremendous, but I do feel, and I feel extremely lucky, so I hope you don't take this as complaining, it's more, I do feel like it would be nice in the future to have the work, just have it not completely overlap each other.
Right.
Because... it's exhausting. You kind of keep switching your mind around. So one thing when you're talking about the film, or one thing when you're getting ready to shoot the film, and then an entirely different headset when you're getting ready to prepare for Newsroom.
Sure.
And then Mindy, and it's all great exercises. They're different muscles, but the overlap is a bit exhausting. And I do think that. Everything kind of suffers when they're all on top of each other. So
yeah.
I hope that I could sit down with you, I don't know, 5 years from now, and have the work be there, but have the time to refill the well.
Totally.
And I hope as a director that I hope people would still let me direct after this, and that I can, direct myself in bigger parts and try to. I think it'd be really challenging that, I have a couple ideas for films where. They would be, just alone, they would have been hard as an actor. And then it'd be nice to also take on the challenge of then directing myself doing that. So,
totally.
And maybe I'll be sitting here telling you, that was a really dumb idea.
No, I don't think so. You're off to a good start, don't
but,
worry.
But I'd like to do that. I'd like to have a company where I direct a bunch of stuff and I think Affleck's got a, he's got, I mean, it's, amazing.
That's like the high end of like what that model is.
Yeah, real high end of it. I mean, that would be the ultimate. I mean, he's got these great movies that he's getting ready and working on to direct and getting to work with Fincher and Terrence Malick and
and he gets to be Batman too.
Yeah, and he gets to be Batman and kick some ass. So that's definitely a role model of sorts.
In our remaining minutes, we always end with a few random questions from a very sketchy looking Indiana Jones hat.
Okay,
you want to take your hand in and take.
I love this. I really love being here.
Thanks, buddy. It's
good to see really you. Do. You're great at what you do.
Go on.
Oh, the worst nightmare I ever had was.
Do you have any recurring, or is there one in particular?
The worst nightmare I ever had came true. Is it the actor's nightmare, where you don't know any of your lines? And just last season on the Newsroom, that actually came true. I was prepping the film. I had just finished the Mindy Project. I asked the Newsroom when they asked me to do the finale. Yes, but write me light. Yes, they said. And about 3 days out, I was in a helicopter. Getting some shots of California with my DP, and a new script came in, and I had a huge speech in the bullpen to the entire cast, and I swear to God, with no exaggeration, for about 50 takes, I couldn't get my lines.
What are you saying? Are you just apologizing profusely to everybody? Or are you
sweating,
just...
apologizing. The hair and makeup is... at some point, they reminded me...
It's broadcast news, it's that sweating thing.
Exactly. I am a pile of water. They're rubbing calming, hand stuff, moisturizer on my hands.
They're just blowing in your ear, it's okay.
Yeah. Jane Fonda kept looking at me and going, I fucking love you. I fucking love you. And I kept apologizing. And Sam Worthington said the greatest thing. He's like, this is what the work looks like.
Nice.
And that's it awesome. Calmed me down for about 2 or 3 seconds, and then I went back to sweating. But it was so my worst nightmare came true.
At least it's done.
Yeah.
At least you can't, one or two more?
Yeah, please. Okay.
The sweat just blended with the tears, so
you
can tell.
Yes, exactly. The last gross thing I ate was at Legoland with my kids. The food was terrible. It was a plethora of of bad things.
Nothing good at Legoland, so surprising. Theme parks are known for their high quality food. Yes.
Great theme park. Kids loved it. We had a lot of fun. They were very, very nice to us. We bought a lot of Legos.
Right.
Spent way too much money, but the food wasn't great. The
movie's pretty good. Did he take the kids to
the movie's amazing. The movie? Yeah. I like the movie, and they love the movie. They're super into the Batman Legos right now. Yeah.
How can you not be?
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see. How about one more?
Yeah.
If it's a good one.
Okay.
If it's a bad one, then two.
And then we'll skip it.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, it's a long one. The next
it's a newsroom moment.
Yeah.
Technological breakthrough.
Technological breakthrough I want to see is... Oh, okay. Boy. That's an interesting question for me.
Yeah. Are you a techie guy? Are you into...
Because I am and I'm not. I'm not at all. But I enjoy, you know, when I'm lost, hitting my iPhone and trying to, you know, and having it escort me to where I'm going. I enjoy taking a picture and being able to change the filter with the
simple pleasure.
Yeah, and being like, hey, I can make myself look like a photographer right now. But I don't want to know. I don't want people to know what I'm doing, right, where I am. You know, a lot of the guys on my show, they all tweet, and I know that it's great because you can. You can promote things,
sure.
And they're writers, and they can tell funny jokes and all that stuff. And I know Instagram is fun. You take a picture and say, you know, you and I are hanging out together,
sure,
at MTV. But I don't know. I think if anything that's going to break through right now with technology is, you know, and not to sound just...
The Luddite, someone that wants to go back in the 30s.
Yeah, no, I would guess that I would want it to be something that, you know... you know, made a cure for diseases and, you know, had people have longer and healthier lives.
You know? Wait, you're saying you want, like, a cure for cancer instead of, like, another Instagram filter?
Yes, I would like that. I got enough Instagram filters.
Whatever, Chris. Priorities, dude. Well, I really do appreciate you coming by today, buddy. It's always good to see you.
I love being here. You're great at what you do. Thanks, and man, you always make me feel comfortable. You know so much about films, and your love from films really does come out, so it's always a joy to talk to you.
Thanks, man. Alex and Vincent at Tribeca, catch it, and hopefully soon after in a theater near you.
Thanks, man.